Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 19th of March. It's all things political. We have yet more primaries to talk about. Puerto Rico taking place over the weekend. A strange thing in Missouri. I have yet to figure out how they select delegates for the convention, but there was another round of caucuses in Missouri on Saturday, and I guess they had a few problems. It was a chaotic day around Missouri, and our guest is from Missouri, so we'll ask about that. It seems as though during this election cycle, the issues are changing constantly, and the issue, at least for the last couple weeks, is whether or not the president has the power to give us $2.50 a gallon gasoline. We will talk about that this hour. Do the Republicans have a problem with women? What about the amount of money that is being raised in this race? I read this morning that President Obama raised $45 million just in the month of February. We'll talk about all of that and more. Our guest this hour is Professor Marvin Overby, a professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Missouri. His research and teaching assignments, he says, are broad and include both a number of topics in American politics as well as some in the area of comparative legislative analysis. He teaches American government, Congress, and legislative politics, politics of the American South, democracy in America, legislative institutions, and American political institutions. Let me give you our phone number. You are ever so welcome to join in the conversation whenever you'd like. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Katie Mattson is answering phones, on air producing for us today as Rhonda is on vacation. Professor Overby, thank you very much for joining us. Good morning.
Good morning, Kathleen. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, nice to have you here. What in the world happened in Missouri? I guess it was kind of up for grabs, and I don't quite understand your process. You have two caucuses?
Well, it's even more complicated than that, Kathleen, because of some ongoing partisan battles between a Republican legislature and a Democratic governor here in the state. The legislature was not able to get a clean election reform bill to the governor. So the bill that came through to him, he vetoed. And that left the Missouri Republican Party with the problem of having originally scheduled a primary before the Republican National Committee allowed states other than states like New Hampshire to have primaries. So what happened was that we then went ahead with our state mandated primary, but it was essentially a beauty contest back in February.
Mm-hmm.
And to actually select delegates, the Republican Party here in Missouri implemented a rather complicated caucus system that involves essentially three levels of caucusing. And we haven't done that here in Missouri since 1996, I believe, was the last time. So it's a process that people were unfamiliar with. It's a process that included both a primary and three sets of caucuses. And so it's become something of a mess.
It sounds like it was a mess. And there were some troubles in some of the polling places yesterday. People were kind of mad at each other, or is that an understatement?
That may be a bit of an understatement in some places. There were a number of these caucuses held around the state, essentially at least one in every county, and especially in some of the areas around St. Louis, St. Charles County, you saw situations essentially boil over, and at least one of these caucus sites had to call in various law enforcement agencies.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, police helicopter was involved.
Oh my!
No, it was something of a mess, and they had to suspend operations at that caucus, and I have yet to hear how that caucus is going to choose its delegates to the next level.
What was the problem?
Well, various problems, and part of it has to do with the fact that the sites were, in some senses, just overwhelmed. A number of places around the state, they just had no idea how many people were going to turn out for this. So they would be meeting in things like city council chambers, where there are fairly strict fire code regulations in place. And, you know, we get too many people to fit into the city council chamber, for instance. They had to either find, on very short notice, find some other place to have the caucus, move the caucus outside, or start keeping people out from the caucus. And, of course, that makes tempers flare and people get upset. And these are not In some senses, they're not like the Iowa caucuses and other caucuses where they do straw polls. The caucuses here went on. I was talking to a friend who went to the Boone County caucus here around Columbia, and he was there for at least 4 hours.
Oh my goodness! But we don't know any results. It's private.
We don't know any results, and in part because there are no straw polls taken. And no straw polls sort of collated by the state Republican Party. And also because this is just the first stage, again, of a three-stage process, and actual delegates won't be awarded until the second and third stages. This week, and it was not just Saturday, it's going to stretch out for the better part of 10 days, I believe. It started last Tuesday, and I believe some of the counties are not holding their caucuses until the 24th, I believe, is the last one. And it has to do with the fact that Saturday was St. Patrick's Day, among other things. But these initial county-level caucuses are actually only choosing representatives to go to the congressional district caucuses that will be held in April. And those congressional district caucuses will then choose roughly half of the delegates who will be going from Missouri to the Republican convention. And they will also select representatives to go to a state convention to be held in early June. And that state convention will essentially choose the remaining half of the delegates to go to Tampa.
So what do you think, 4 years from now, are you going to have a different system?
Oh, I imagine so. I suspect that this doesn't make the state or the Republican Party look very good or very efficient. So I suspect the legislature will get something through to change this.
Yeah. Mitt Romney won Puerto Rico, not a bad place to go to campaign.
This time of year, that's exactly right.
And I guess that wasn't a huge surprise.
No, I don't think so. Romney just has simply a better organization to try to fight this and slog this battle out in, you know, 50 states and a number of dependencies as well. So he's just simply in a better position, has the money and the resources to be able to go to places like Puerto Rico.
I noticed over the weekend that anti-Santorum ads started running here in Wisconsin, and our primary isn't until April. Somebody's got a whole lot of money to start running ads this early, don't you think?
They do indeed. I saw one of the Sunday morning shows did an analysis of how much each candidate is spending per vote, and Romney's spending well over $12 per vote, and Santorum is down around $3 per vote. So, you know, the notion that Santorum is being outspent 3, 4, 5 to 1 is not very far off.
Why doesn't he just take everybody out to dinner? Really, wouldn't that be better?
It might be.
I would do that if I were running. Tomorrow is Illinois, a fairly big state. Are there any indications of where that state might go, and how important is it?
Well, I think it's symbolically important, in part because it's Barack Obama's home state. So whichever candidate wins that state will certainly trumpet that. Again, it's one of these states that is probably not going to be a clean sweep. The Republican Party doesn't allow winner-take-all primaries and this early in the process. So we're likely to see this break down some by congressional district as well. The polls appear to show Romney having a relatively small but relatively stable advantage, somewhere between 4, 5, 6, 7%. So he is he's very likely to get the majority or to get a plurality of the vote tomorrow in Illinois, and will probably do very well in terms of the delegate count as well. Again, states like Illinois, there are a number of the delegates, I think it's 12 in Illinois, that won't be decided until the state convention, and essentially the state party leadership will assign those 12 delegates. And they're probably more likely to go to Romney anyway, and they're probably even more likely to go to Romney as this process drags out and it becomes less likely that a Santorum insurgency or a Gingrich insurgency is going to have the votes necessary to upset Romney at the convention.
What do you make of this enthusiasm gap? There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of enthusiasm for the evident. He has been for a long time, for Mitt Romney. This article I was reading said out of a dozen states where voters have been polled, most Romney voters have said they strongly favor him just 5 out of those dozen states. That's not very much. I guess it could portend a problem for people getting out and voting. But why is there such an enthusiasm gap? And does one of the other candidates have the wind at his back?
To a certain extent, the enthusiasm gap is a Republican problem, if you want to call it a problem. And, you know, there's an old saying in politics that Democrats fall in love and Republicans fall in line. And I think we're seeing that again this time. Romney was the next person in line. He was the senior candidate coming out of 2008. And like McCain before him, like any number of Republican candidates before him, he was simply the next person in line to get the nomination. And that does not set you up to get a candidate who is particularly enthralling to the voters, who's particularly energizing. It does set you up to get someone like a Mitt Romney, a reasonably experienced, reasonably adept at campaigning, experienced at campaigning, the kind of person who tends to have what Romney has lined up a lot of money beforehand and has a good organization in place. And, you know, as the kids would say, that's not nothing in politics. There may be an enthusiasm gap, but there's also an organization gap, and that works to Romney's advantage.
And what happens if Gingrich should decide, and do you think he ever will decide or will decide soon, to drop out of the race?
That's a good question, and I don't have an easy answer to that. I'm not at all sure the speaker is going to decide to drop out. Given his age, given his sort of position in American politics, this is likely to be his last significant moment on the national stage, and he may have the kind of personality that advises him to stick it out, not because he thinks at the end of the day he's likely to win the nomination, but because he likes the limelight, and this is his chance to be in the limelight again. So I'm not at all sure that at this point he's likely to step aside. There seems to be some sort of personal edge to his relationship with Romney that, again, probably speaks to his staying in the race. If he does drop out, it's not at all clear that his delegates, that he could direct his delegates simply to line up behind a Rick Santorum. There would probably be some sizable portion of them, maybe not a majority, but some sizable portion, who would go to the candidate they felt would be more likely to actually get the nomination, and that still is Mitt Romney.
What about his call for $2.50 a gallon gasoline? I was thinking this morning about how the issues change because the news cycle is so darn rapid. He has, I think, very effectively brought that up, and now gasoline prices, $4 or a little bit over $4. Has that become a significant issue in this campaign? Will it continue to be a significant issue in the campaign? And do you have to give Gingrich credit for focusing on it?
Again, a complicated question. I'm not sure I'm the right person to answer it, not being a specialist in economics and especially energy economics. But my sense of it is that presidents have relatively little effect on the price of gasoline we pay at the pump. But it is a very popular populist position, right? People don't like paying that much for gasoline. Americans are not used to paying that much for gasoline. And so it's an issue that resonates with the American public. I suspect that in his heart of hearts, Newt Gingrich realizes there's very little that a President Gingrich could do to actually bring about a $2.50 cap on the price of gasoline. That's something that price is generally set by a world market over which we have, any American president has relatively little influence. But it is something that, as I said, resonates with the American public, and it's an easy issue to understand. It's a nice soundbite, and Gingrich has been trying to ride it. I suspect at the end of the day, it does less to help Gingrich and more to hurt Obama than the other way around. An American president does not want people grumbling about the price of American petroleum as he's going to run for re-election. But it's not at all clear to me that's an issue that can propel a candidate from essentially the second tier of challengers into the first tier.
Mm. We'll ask what those issues are that propel candidates in a moment. Our guest this hour for All Things Political, Professor Marvin Overby, professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Missouri. They had their turn for another set of caucuses, which really are continuing. They already had what's been deemed a beauty contest in February, and they were wild in Missouri, these caucuses. They had to close some of them down. as you heard him say. We are welcoming phone calls. Here's our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I want to ask him about Rush Limbaugh because there's, I don't understand the ins and outs of this, but I think there's some kind of movement to have a statue of him. Is it in the State House? And there is concern over what's been happening recently with him as to whether or not that project should proceed. The governor of Missouri was concerned about such an honor. Would you agree that the price of gasoline is the major issue right now? We have yet to talk about the Republicans having a problem with women voters. Do they need to get on a different path here in terms of talking about issues other than birth control? And here's our number. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address, use that if you'd like, is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Hour two of our program, Journal Sentinel had an interesting story in their food section last week about eating locally, and a wonderful interview with Marcia Carmichael, who's the Historic Gardens Coordinator for Old World Wisconsin. She'll be talking to us about, you know, when people moved here from Poland to Germany and Ireland, they ate locally. So what kinds of gardens did they fashion? Those gardens are in Old World Wisconsin as well, the Polish gardens, the German gardens, the Irish gardens. What can we learn from those who ate locally long before we started thinking about it in a big way? To your phone calls momentarily, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls, and let's start with Andy in Lake Geneva. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
Fine. How are you, Andy?
Fine, thank you. I just wanted to, I heard this lack of ambulance for Romney. I think that once he gets this nomination, I think you're going to see a lot of people focus in on him. And once they do, they're going to find a person of extreme accomplishment and a turnaround person, which is what we need. I mean, in many ways, Mitt Romney represents the American dream come true. I mean, here's a guy who took money, donated from his parents, donated it to charity, and went on to make a fortune, Harvard educated. I mean, you know, a 40-year marriage. I mean, this fella, I've talked to a lot of young people, and a lot of young people who I frankly categorize as winners, okay, as opposed to losers or slackers, they want to be like Mitt Romney. I mean, they want to achieve what this man achieved, and it seems quite honestly, okay, quite forthrightly. So I think what you're going to see is you're going to see a shift, the title change take place once the man gets the nomination. And the reason for his aloofness or presumed aloofness is really not the fact. He's not a common guy. You know, he's not in the pit. He doesn't, you know, he's sort of a patrician type of American that I think at this, especially with this goofy culture that we have, we could use somebody with some class. And I think that that's what he represents. And a lot of people, you know, they kind of get turned off by this, you know, they want somebody who's a little bit more, in quotes, common. He's not common. And so he's exceptional. And so I think you're going to see a change and a rising sense of ebullience. And I also think, and then I'll shut up, I also think he's well beyond just the fact that he's organized, but by being organized and getting a lot of money shows the fact that he basically knows what he's doing.
Do you think that he's running too far to the right, Andy, and he will switch his tactics for the general election?
I don't think so, Kathleen. I think what's kind of ironic is he's called a moderate by Santorum, and he says, you know, there's a moderate in Romney who's a moderate just like Obama. Well, I mean, hello, that's what you need. I think this fellow is far from far right. I think he's pretty much in the center. I think he understands what it takes to beat Barack Obama, who is, you know, and I think like a very reasoned person who understands priority, he's going to attack it very systematically in a very business-like fashion. So, no, I don't think he is far right at all. I think, however, he's going to bring a vice president who is going to be certainly evangelical, you know, some person who counterbalances I know his finance person in Puerto Rico quite well. I went to school with these folks. And this is a husband, you know, they're establishment people in Puerto Rico, but they are evangelical Roman Catholics. Mm-hmm. And like Franklin Graham, they got behind Romney, knowing full well that he's basically a center of the road type of guy who doesn't, you know, who is not Catholic and the like. So that's kind of a long-winded answer to your question. I think you're going to see a real moderate here.
All right. Thanks, Andy. Always like to hear from you. Professor Overby.
I've got just a couple of responses to Andy's question, which I think was a good one, and his comments were generally good. Candidates, when they're running for the nomination, face what's sometimes called the two constituencies problem. A constituency that's either pushed to the left in the case of Democrats or pushed to the right in the case of Republicans in the primaries, and then they have to move back to the center for the general election. And to a certain extent, Mitt Romney, like every other candidate, has faced that problem this year. They've had to deal with questions like abortion, like contraception, and those are not the kind of issues that candidate Romney is particularly adept at answering, feels particularly comfortable with, or are the kind of issues that are likely to be major ones in the general election. And to the extent that he's had to deal with those questions during the primary season, I think it's hurt him, and he's going to have to move back to the center. In Romney's case, that's a bit more of a problem than usual because he already has something of a public reputation as someone who has no core set of values, as someone who's simply a politician interested in winning. And in that regard, I think Andy is right in some of his implications, which include the fact that Romney's essentially a manager, right? He's not an ideologue. He's not someone who has a whole lot of ideological commitments. He's a manager.
Mm-hmm.
In the private sector, interested in increasing profit, and in the public sector, interested in efficient management of the government apparatus. That, I think, is going to make him a more attractive general election candidate, but it is proved to be something of a problem for him in the primaries, because in primaries you generally need to sort of mobilize your base and to give them some red meat, and Romney's not particularly adept at that.
Do you think I think this issue of offshore accounts, considering where the economy is, how people are struggling. Andy says people want to grow up to be like him. I think there are a significant number of Americans who say, wait a second, you took your money and you put it offshore, and enough is enough. You have a whole lot of money. Do you think that Obama will use that as an issue against him, and is that a problematic issue for him? I mean, it was legal, but
sure.
Still there's something that's not real comfortable, makes people real comfortable with that.
Well, I think it absolutely will be an issue in the general election, just like it has been in the primary season. And, you know, you can certainly envision ads run by the Obama administration featuring Rick Santorum or Newt Gingrich making these charges. And that's, you know, one of the problems that any challenger faces is that a lot of the issues that are going to dog them in the general election have already been vetted and run by their competition in the primary elections. The sort of underlying core problem for Romney, I think, is that he's not a particularly warm individual. He's not the kind of person that a lot of us can identify with immediately on first meeting him. And it's long been said that Americans seek in a president an uncommon common man. And I think Romney has a problem trying to make that connection as a common man. He doesn't strike a lot of folks as the kind of person they'd be comfortable sitting down and having a beer with. And, of course, famously, that's one of the ways that Americans sort of predict who's going to be the next president.
Right. I think that's how we got Bill Clinton and George Bush.
Exactly. But, yeah.
Thanks, Andy, so much for your call. Muhammad in Madison. Hi, Muhammad.
Excuse me, hi, Kathleen. Have either of you seen the ad that the PAC is running criticizing Rick Santorum?
Yeah, it appeared all over the place this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it's not likely that I would support Rick Santorum, but I can't imagine that it's insulting to me to think that saying the things they say in the ad, like a picture of Hillary Clinton, he voted for convicted felons to vote. I mean, what is wrong with allowing people, even if they've made a mistake, that once they pay their debt to society, they're no longer under supervision, that they shouldn't be able to exercise the right to vote. I don't understand why they're not, you know, people wouldn't be insulted by that. And the idea seems like, well, whoever's got a lot of money, we can let the media tell you who to vote for by just putting this message out here. I think it's very insulting.
It's amazing how many political ads there are, isn't it, Muhammad? The Walker ads and the Falk ads and the now we've got the PAC ads, anti-Santorum ads. It's just
and
endless.
They don't tell the truth, Kathleen. I mean, if you know what Governor Walker has done as far as jobs compared to what he said he was going to do, I mean, we are leading the nation in the number of jobs we are losing or not producing. And he thinks just because I put an ad on television, to me, that's insulting to the intelligence of people that, you know, that this would tell me that I think this guy should stay in office or should not be recalled or that I should vote to keep him there. When I know this is not what is going on in the real world. I just think it's insulting is my point. Thank you for the time.
Thanks, Muhammad. What about those ads not speaking to the real world? Is that true of a lot of them, but is that indeed effective, Professor Overby?
I'm reminded of something Lyndon Johnson is supposed to have said running against Barry Goldwater, which is that you just have to get the other side to deny the claims you're making and you've won. And I think there's a lot of truth in that old political aphorism. These ads, and I have not seen the one that's been running in Wisconsin, so I can't speak to it in particular, but these ads are designed to elicit something of a response from the other side, right? To try to change the media coverage, change the news cycle, get the other side off talking about whatever topic they want to talk about, and refocus attention on the ads that the campaign that's running them wants to focus on, allowing convicted felons to vote or whatever. I believe Mohammed's right. There's, you know, in America, we generally believe in giving people second chances, and once you've paid your debt to society, you should be allowed to vote and have all the full rights of citizenship. But that takes longer than 30 seconds to make that defense. And as a member of Congress I used to work for, any time a response takes more than 30 seconds, you've lost about half the audience. Hmm. So these ads, you know, it's a long tradition in American politics of sort of throwing out these charges, and the charges are more likely to stick than the reasonable responses to them. And, you know, I'll say this in large measure, that's because unlike Muhammad and a lot of your listeners, most of the American public is paying only limited attention to this and has only limited knowledge base to work from and not much of a framework to evaluate these ads.
Isn't that something? I know what you say is true. We are so involved in it by a moment-to-moment basis that it's hard for me to believe that there are a lot of people who don't know what's going on.
No, that's exactly right. I'm teaching a class of roughly 500 freshmen here this year at the University of Missouri, and you know, they are by definition, they're smart, engaged people, and yet still most of them pay relatively little attention to what's going on in the political races.
Well, we got to do something about that.
I'm trying.
I know you are. We are, too. We're doing our part right now. Our number is 800-486-8655. It's All Things Political for this Monday. Illinois primary is tomorrow. Any thoughts about that or the primaries that have already taken place? The issues that are shifting now, the price of gasoline. What about Republicans and women? Do they have a problem here? And what about Rush Limbaugh? We have to get to that yet during the time remaining. But we have lines open for you right now with Professor Marvin Overby, Professor of Political Science at the University of Missouri. Zach in Milwaukee, hi.
Hey, I had a quick comment. I heard a professor say that Republicans fall in line like with McCain, and they say it's been said that the media gave us Obama. But in any case, I was just wondering, well, what gave us McCain? And then, you know, to say like Mitt Romney is to fall in line, but really, the issue will be the economy, and it should be, even though it will go, it'll derive somewhere else, but it should be on, like, mandates, and it should be on bailouts, like bailing out the European Union or something, and it should be about, you know, the challenges of this day, not, you know, birth control and whatnot, but I wanted to know why a majority of veterans are supporting Ron Paul. I want to know that, Professor.
I'm not sure a majority are supporting Ron Paul, but if they are, I think the obvious answer to that is that Paul has taken more of an isolationist stand in terms of American foreign policy. And we are now engaged in what has become, by some good measure, the longest war in American history in Afghanistan. We're still involved in Iraq, and I think a lot of Americans, including a lot of veterans, have lost faith in the mission, have lost a sense that the mission there can be accomplished, have lost a sense that we have any identifiable exit strategy, we have any definition of what victory would entail. And I think that both for some veterans, I'm sure, and for a lot of young people, Ron Paul picks up on some of that and channels some of that anxiety and anger about a military policy and a foreign policy that has seemed to not have been very productive, and again that where it's difficult to even define what victory would mean in some of these places.
It seems to me as though that's going to be a difficult issue for the president. All it takes is one horrific event, the massacre, and you've got the whole conversation about Afghanistan changing literally in a couple days. He has a lot of troops there. There doesn't seem to be, at least from Americans' perspective, much change in what's happened. You hear from some people who will say that things are better there. But when you've got polls saying it wasn't worth our being there, continuing to have our forces there, it's going to be hard for him to justify, don't you think?
I think it will be. President Obama is not without his foreign policy successes, and we're going
right.
We're going to hear Osama bin Laden's name mentioned many times in the general election in various ads. It's not clear to me. I think it's a problem for the Obama administration, but it's not clear to me exactly how whoever the Republican nominee is, how they're going to take advantage of that.
Right.
Because the Republicans have been even more of in sort of a double down mentality about this.
Mm-hmm.
That's beginning to change, I think, among the Republican rank and file. But Ron Paul is the only Republican candidate out there who has a position that's clearly identifiable and different from the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm. So is there a big debate in Missouri about whether or not, is it a statue that's being placed in the State House?
I believe that's right, Kathleen, a statue.
For Rush Limbaugh.
Of famous Missourians. Yeah.
Huh. Is there a big debate about that?
I have not heard much about it.
Really?
I think it's more of a national issue than it is here locally. But, he's a problematic figure. And I think even for a lot of Republicans around the country and around the state, he is something of an embarrassment because he has become much more of an entertainer than a responsible political advocate. And I think that's potentially a problem for the Republican Party. It would have been a lot more of a problem, I think, a decade ago when he was much more closely associated with the Republican establishment. He won a couple of straw polls among Republican identifiers as the candidate they'd like to see run for president. But that's some time ago in the past. I think that his position now is much more sort of an agent provocateur and an entertainer. So I'm not sure carries the same political baggage it did a decade ago.
You know, what's interesting to me, and maybe you have a different take on this, I've been in radio for a long time, but it's interesting the number of stations really all over the country that are conservative talk, and they only interview Republicans, and they only espouse Republican candidates to run for office. And it's changed the whole nature, I think, of radio. And I really believe that Rush Limbaugh had a lot to do with that.
Well, now you're talking about a topic that's near and dear to my research heart.
All right.
I do a good bit of research on radio advertising.
Well, all right. I asked you the right question,
yeah.
Then, huh?
And it's not just talk radio, Kathleen. The very nature of how and why people listen to the radio as opposed to how and why they watch television means that you get a much more segmented audience on radio. And you see the same thing with campaign ads, in that you very, very rarely get competing campaign ads on different radio stations, because radio listenership is format driven, as you know, and to a large extent, that tracks musical taste for, you know, for some good number of the 14,000 radio stations in the country. And musical tastes tend to track demographics. So you're not going to have a 55-year-old soccer mom from suburban Chicago is not going to be listening to the same stations as a 19-year-old young black man from the inner city. They're just going to be listening to
right.
two different radio worlds. And campaigns find it much easier to target those audiences on radio than on television. So you get radio ads that are much more pointed, much angrier sometimes, mm-hmm. much more antagonistic, because you don't risk the blowback of offending people you didn't mean to talk to in the first place. And you cannot assume that on television, which is broadcast and essentially everyone is listening to the same thing.
Interesting. Zach, thanks for the call. Jeanette in Richland Center. Hi, Jeanette.
Hello. First of all, I'll say that I'm a Republican. I am lower middle class, and I'm 60 years old. Now, the reason I'm saying this is the first time in my life that I have to say that if Mitt Romney is the candidate, I don't know that I can vote for Obama. If there's a good third-party candidate, I may vote for them. Or I'll stay home, and I've never done that. But the reason is, I do not believe that man has a clue when it comes to the lower middle class and the poor any more than I have a clue how it would be to live as a rich person. I'm not saying he's a bad person because of this, but since he is like this, I don't think he has the capability of understanding and working for people that really need to be worked for. And I think that the economy is going to continue to be an issue. And his comments, my wife drives two Cadillacs, I'll make a $10,000 bet. I can't forget those because I really don't think he understands what it feels like to be poor. I know he doesn't. And I have to live paycheck to paycheck, and sometimes I have to choose between paying bills and eating. And that's the way the majority of the American people are right now, I believe. So I could not vote for him under any circumstances. And as I said, at 60 years old, this would have to be the very first time in my life, because I don't believe he will work for us, and I don't believe the economy will improve.
And you said you couldn't vote for the president, for President Obama, and why?
Say I couldn't.
You wouldn't, probably.
Well, it would be very hard for me because I don't see that he's really done very much for us either. I don't know that I could vote for him. If a third-party candidate were there, maybe then I could think about it. Otherwise, first time in my life, I may stay home.
Professor Overby.
Well, a couple of responses to that, Kathleen and Janet. First is, I wouldn't count on there being a serious third-party candidate this time around. I mean, in any election, there are going to be plenty of other candidates on the ballot besides the Republicans and the Democrats. But it's very, very rare in American politics for a third-party candidate to mount a serious challenge to either of the two major parties. So I would suspect if you're going to vote for a minor party, you'd essentially be throwing your vote away. But this is a problem for the Romney camp. He is a candidate who is wealthy, and as one of the earlier callers says, you know, he's sort of an American model for success. But he doesn't come across as particularly empathetic, and that's the problem that the voters like Janet have with him, that they don't see him as someone who can appreciate and sympathize and empathize with their particular situations. And I don't think it's entirely a matter of wealth. I think there are plenty of very wealthy candidates in American politics who have a reputation for having that sort of empathy. I mean, I was looking recently at figures for Nancy Pelosi, you know, Speaker of the House, liberal Democrat. You know, she's worth something like $35 or $40 million. But she has that ability to reach out to people of lower socioeconomic status. Bill Clinton's the same way, not a poor man, but someone who has the ability to really empathize with the American public and for that empathy to come across. Romney, for a variety of reasons, still has problems with that. There's the old saying that he was born with a silver foot in his mouth. He tends to say things about $10,000 bets and about driving Cadillacs that just show show him to have a tin ear on some of these matters. He's gotten better about it. He was actually much worse with these sort of gaffes back in 2008, and he's gotten somewhat better about it. But it doesn't come naturally to him, and that's going to hurt him, I think, as callers like Janet will acknowledge.
It wasn't just a Cadillac. A couple Cadillacs was
right,
the answer.
Right.
You got to think, what was he thinking? Why would you say such a thing? Yeah. A couple of them. One you can get by with.
And again, that's a problem for a Republican Party that people already suspect or believe or you know, have doubts about in terms of a country club image. And Romney, unfortunately, sort of triggers a lot of those negative stereotypes that voters have about country club, out of touch, Republicans.
Yeah. You know, you have to wonder, though, Jeanette makes an interesting point, that there aren't many politicians of either stripe who are addressing the needs of people who are poor in this country, people who have to live paycheck to paycheck, who may be losing their jobs, who may run out of unemployment benefits, who have to depend on food pantries in order to get their food. I can remember when there was a war on poverty in this nation. We are so far from that. We are so far from making this any kind of national priority.
Well, that's true. And, you know, the cynic in me and the political realist says that poor people are less likely to vote, and poor people are certainly less likely to donate money to campaigns.
Right.
And that's the bottom line for a lot of campaigns.
More phone calls momentarily. It's All Things Political. You're listening to for this Monday, the 19th of March. Our phone number, a couple lines are open for you right now, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, Marcia Carmichael. She is the Historic Gardens Coordinator at Old World Wisconsin. What can we learn from people who were eating locally because the garden was right outside the place you lived? She has restored many of the gardens, followed the pattern of those who were the Irish immigrants, the German immigrants, the Polish immigrants to Wisconsin, to find out research on what they grew and when they grew it. And we will talk about that the second hour of our show. Should be kind of fun, huh? Tom in South Beloit. Hi.
Good morning, Kathleen, and good morning to your guest. Just to give you a perspective from the Illinois side of the Cheddar Curtain, I've never had so many robocalls and campaign mailers and stuff like that.
Oh, my.
I suppose some of it is due to the fact that the Republican primaries are actually being contested this year. But I wondered if your guest, you know, you hear dribs and drabs about how much money Romney's spending, and you consider Romney and his super PAC versus Santorum and his super PAC and Newton and his super PAC. But a lot of that money is Romney's money, too, I think. And has anybody actually done a breakdown other than just single states and stuff like that as to the total amount of money that Romney is, I'm assuming, is outspending all of his opponents?
Professor Overby.
Let me say, I lived in Chicago for 3 years and never heard the term cheddar curtains. So I'm not sure I'll work that into
I like it.
At some point.
We'll use that, too. Thank you, Tom.
Tom, you know, the Federal Election Commission keeps pretty good records on, in fact, very good records on how much the individual candidates' campaigns raise and spend. The problem is that their reporting is so meticulous that they tend to lag behind. So it's going to be several months before we know exactly how much money was being raised and spent right now in places like Illinois. But eventually we'll have that information. In terms of the super PACs, I'm not sure exactly what the reporting requirements are for them. So I'm not at all convinced that we're going to get the same sort of meticulous, careful breakdown on where they're raising money and how and where it's being spent. But for the campaigns themselves, that's a very well regulated part of the economy, really. And the Federal Election Commission, you can go to fec.gov and you can find information about every candidate, what they've spent. And again, those numbers are updated, I think, quarterly now. And so by the end of the next quarter, we'll be able to see what was being done and how much money was being spent right now.
I would imagine those constant robocalls reach a breaking point for people. Those would drive me nuts, Tom.
It does. But I have an answering machine, so I actually just get to erase them all, you know, like somebody deleting their spam mail or whatever.
Right.
But I can come home and I can have seven or eight of them on the answering machine.
And what if you're at home and you have to answer the call? Don't people putting together campaigns think about that, that it might be a negative thing, Professor Overby?
I think they do. And I'm often a bit perplexed about robocalls for high-profile offices like president. I mean, generally, from most political contests, you want to do things like robocalls because most of the voters simply don't know the names of the candidates. That's not the case here. So I think there's potentially a lot more, there's much more of a negative downside to robocalls in a race like this, where the candidates are all fairly well known to the American public. It's not like you're going to get a whole lot more name recognition out of robocalls,
right.
And that's the kind of thing you'd expect more in a congressional race or even a local race where you're trying simply to drive up name recognition. And even if you're annoyed with the robocall, if you hear the name, it's likely to affect the way you vote when you go to the polling place.
Well, enjoy all the national spotlight tomorrow, Tom.
Yeah, well, the tone of these robocalls, though, is generally negative, just so you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about name recognition, whether it's on the national level or whether it's on the local level, because we have a lot of stuff going on state and county-wise, too. But it's just an endless stream of them.
Right.
And that doesn't surprise me at all, that to the extent those calls are done, oftentimes it's try to demobilize as opposed to mobilize.
Thank you so much for the call. Doug in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi. I'm curious as to where your guest gets his information. What avenues news does he listen to?
Well, do you have a more specific question than that? What is he? That's
yeah,
a pretty
yeah.
broad
some
question.
Some of the things that your guest is saying is just absolute bunk.
What, like what?
Where do you get the information that conservatives are embarrassed about Rush Limbaugh? You know where you get it at? You get it at the station you're currently broadcasting on, as well as ABC and NBC. I am sure that that's your limit of interest. And as far as Romney is concerned, who said that Romney is not empathetic? Who said that Romney is not sympathetic to people? That is so nonsense. That comes out of ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS. You know, you want to talk about a person that's out of touch? You mentioned Obama. Here's a guy that went golfing how many times, flies around with his wife and kids on a jet, takes many, many vacations. Clinton? It's about time that somebody at your station challenges things that are spewed from National Public Radio and WPR.
All right, Doug, aren't you embarrassed by Rush Limbaugh?
No, I'm not embarrassed by Rush Limbaugh. I mean, are you embarrassed by the guy David or what's his name, Bill Maher? Are you embarrassed by him?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. And that's enough of this call. You know, we're not going to get anywhere
I would simply mention that the person who said that Mitt Romney was not empathetic was Republican voter Janet.
Exactly. Well, and it's hard. I mean, you view him, you watch what he's doing. It's obvious that he has a problem connecting with people.
And Barack Obama is not above this charge either. And on that point,
right.
I would agree with Doug. He comes across sometimes as too ethereal, too intellectual, not sympathetic enough. But I wasn't asked about Barack Obama. I was asked about Mitt Romney.
Exactly. And I would imagine you have many sources of information.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. We have one.
And I've worked for both sides of the political aisle, too. So.
Let's go to Luba. We have about a minute left. Hi, Luba.
Good morning. I have a question, but this is from a book I just got from the University Library, Rule and Ruin, The Downfall of Moderation and the Destruction of the Republican Party. And it mentions a Club for Growth, a deep-pocketed right-wing pressure group founded in 1999. And they're anti-tax, and they're forcing modern Republicans out of office. And this is by 2002, the club has become the largest source of campaign funds for Republicans outside of the party itself, and then goes into the millions that they poured trying to get rid of moderates.
All right, I need to hold you there. We're almost out of time. You're familiar with it, I'm sure, Professor Overby.
I am, and I guess my best response would be that I think we tend to overestimate sometimes the effect of groups like Club for Growth. Most of the money that comes in for at every level of politics comes from individuals, not from groups, not from PACs. Most of the money to most candidates, most of the time, comes in from individuals.
Well, that was to the point.
It's a common misperception.
Thank you so much for being with us. It was a really, it was a good hour. Thank you.
It was my pleasure, Kathleen.
Our guest this hour, Professor Marvin Overby. He's a professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Missouri, where he teaches all kinds of courses on American government and Congress and legislative politics, the American South, democracy, legislative institutions, and American political institutions. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Katie Mattson for on-air production. Rhonda's on vacation this week, so Katie will be doing some of the on-air production, which is nice. So that's it for this hour. Thanks for all of your for most of your calls, everybody. We can at least be polite to each other. After all, it's public radio, right? We have news coming up, and we'll return with another hour.